Chapter 39, England's Greatest Playwright, William Shakespeare. Elizabeth worked hard ruling her country, but sometimes she took time off to enjoy herself. She loved music, and she kept a 50-person choir and a full orchestra at court. She paid composers to write songs for her choir. She even sang herself, playing the lyre, an instrument with strings as accompaniment. She liked poetry and wrote a few verses herself. Most of all, she enjoyed seeing a good play, especially a play written by William Shakespeare, England's most famous playwright. Shakespeare was born 6 years after Elizabeth became queen. When he was young, he acted in a traveling company that went from town to town, performing plays in wooden theaters and in the courtyards of inns. When he grew a little older, Shakespeare and several friends formed their own band of actors. Shakespeare acted parts, helped choose costumes, ran rehearsals, found props, and wrote plays. He wrote comedies, funny plays, such as The Taming of the Shrew, about a hot-tempered woman who has to marry a man she doesn't like, and A Midsummer Night's Dream, about fairies who play tricks on people who wander through the woods. He wrote tragedies, sad plays such as Hamlet, about a prince who has to avenge his father's death, and Romeo and Juliet, about a boy and girl who fall in love, even though their families hate each other. And he wrote historical plays based on the lives of great men and women in the past. Richard III tells the story of the English king who took the throne from the princes in the Tower. Henry V is about the Battle of Agincourt in France. In all, Shakespeare wrote more than 40 plays. They have been performed over and over again for the last 450 years. Shakespeare's plays have been translated into almost every language. They have been made into movies, written about in books, and studied in schools. Some of the most familiar phrases in English come from Shakespeare's plays. Have you ever heard someone say, "Something is rotten in the state of Denmark"? Or, "To be or not to be, that is the question"? Both lines are from Hamlet. A horse, my kingdom for a horse," is from Richard III. Has your mother ever said, "You're going to eat me out of house and home"? Shakespeare first used that expression in Henry IV, Part II. And if you've ever heard jealousy called the green-eyed monster, you've heard a line from Othello. One of Shakespeare's most famous plays, Macbeth, tells about a nobleman who wants to be king. Here is the beginning of the story. Macbeth. Scotland was at war. White-haired King Duncan, afraid that a band of rebels would throw him from his throne, sent his cousin Macbeth and Macbeth's trusted friend Banquo to fight the rebels. He waited anxiously to hear the outcome of the battle. Finally, a soldier arrived, covered with blood, straight from the battlefront. "Macbeth faced the enemy with brandished steel," the soldier gasped. "He fixed their leader's head upon the battlements. He and Banquo have fought like cannons overcharged with double cracks." "Valiant cousin," King Duncan cried out, "great happiness!" And he decreed that Macbeth would receive a new noble title, Thane of Cawdor. Thane is a Scottish word for a warrior who fights for the king. Meanwhile, Macbeth and Banquo were trudging home across a blasted heath, a bare, barren field, through fog and wind. Suddenly they saw three weird women crouched around a fire. "Hail," the weird women cackled. "Hail, Macbeth, Thane of Cawdor, king of Scotland-to-be. And hail, Banquo, you will not be king, but you will be father to kings." And then they disappeared. "Where'd they go?" Banquo asked. "Have we gone insane? I'm not the father of kings. And why did they call you Thane of Cawdor and king of Scotland? You're neither." But just then messengers arrived. "Macbeth," they said, "we have brought you word from King Duncan. He has made you Thane of Cawdor." When Macbeth heard this news, he was disturbed. The words of the weird women had already begun to come true. But how could he become King of Scotland, as well as Thane of Cawdor? His cousin Duncan was king. Then Macbeth realized that he could become king if he turned traitor and had Duncan murdered. But he thrust the thought away from him. "Let not light see my black and deep desires," he muttered to himself. But the idea stayed with him. He wrote a letter to his wife, Lady Macbeth, who was still in their castle back home. He told her about the weird women and their words. At once, Lady Macbeth seized onto the idea of Duncan's death. If her husband became king, she would become queen. But she thought to herself, Macbeth is too full of the milk of human kindness to murder his cousin. Just as she finished reading her husband's letter, Lady Macbeth heard a messenger approaching the castle. The messenger wore the royal colors. "The king comes here tonight," the messenger announced, sliding from his horse. "Macbeth is with him. They are returning from the battlefront. Make everything ready." At once, Lady Macbeth decided that she and Macbeth would murder King Duncan that very night. She paced the room, convincing herself that she was brave enough for such a deed. "Spirit of courage and ambition, fill me from the crown to the toe, top full of direst cruelty," she growled to herself. "Make thick my blood. Let no regret or conscience shake my purpose." As she spoke these horrible words, Macbeth came into the room. "Duncan is with me," he said. Lady Macbeth put her hand on his arm. "He must be provided for," she said, with great meaning. But although Macbeth knew what his wife meant, he turned away from her. The idea of becoming king was more and more wonderful to him, but he was not yet ready to kill his cousin, King Duncan. Just then the king himself entered with Banquo and other noblemen. At once Lady Macbeth was all smiles. "Your Majesty," she cried, "you load our house with honor. Our servants are yours. Come to the hall where a great feast has been laid for you." And she led the king from the room. Macbeth remained fretting to himself. "If I were going to do it," he mumbled, "I would need to do it quickly, not wait. But oh, what a dreadful deed it would be. He is here both as my king and as my cousin. I am his host. I should shut the door against murderers, not bear the knife myself. Oh, I do not have enough determination to do this thing." When Lady Macbeth returned, having taken Duncan and the others to the dining hall, Macbeth was stern. "Lady, we will go no further with this dreadful plan. He has just given me a great honor. How can I do this?" "What?" Lady Macbeth snapped back. "Are you afraid? You'll have to live with your cowardice the rest of your life. Be a man. Screw your courage to the sticking place. When Duncan is asleep, I'll give his guards drugged wine so that they sleep like pigs, and then we'll say that his guards did it." "But will they believe us?" Macbeth asked nervously. "Of course they will," Lady Macbeth said. "We'll be weeping so hard over Duncan's death that they'll never suspect us." What do you think Macbeth will decide to do when the story continues? Macbeth's decision. In another part of the castle, Banquo was getting ready for bed. He took off his sword and handed it over to his servant, and then glanced out at the starless night. "There's good housekeeping in heaven," he murmured to himself. "All their candles have been put out. I should put my candle out as well, but I'm too restless. I feel that something terrible may happen tonight." As he said these words, Macbeth knocked on the door. "Do you have everything you need?" he inquired. "I do," Banquo said, "but I'm too restless to sleep. I've been thinking over the words of the weird women. They said that you would be Thane of Cawdor, and you are. But when they said you would be king..." "Let's talk about that later," Macbeth interrupted, "when you have the time. For tonight, sleep well." While Macbeth and Banquo were talking, Lady Macbeth took drugged wine to Duncan's guards. Soon they were slumped outside the king's door, snoring. She took their daggers gently from their belts and crept into the king's room. Duncan, too, slept, but as Lady Macbeth stared down at him, she realized that he looked like her father. "I cannot do it," she whispered to herself, backing from the room. But she laid the daggers before the doorstep. "Macbeth will see them when he comes by," she thought, "and perhaps he will do the deed." After Macbeth left Banquo, he wandered up and down the hall in a frenzy of uncertainty. As he grew more frantic, he began to see things. "I think I see a dagger hanging before me in the air," he cried. "Is it my imagination? Is it a vision telling me to carry out this dreadful plot? Here is a real dagger in my belt. Will I draw it? Yes, I will. I have made up my mind. Duncan, this night you will go to heaven or to hell." And he made his way towards the stairs. Lady Macbeth waited for her husband in their rooms. When she heard his step, she opened the door. There he stood, his face white. "I have done it," he whispered, "but I think I will never sleep again. I thought I heard a voice cry, 'Sleep no more! Macbeth doth murder sleep! Macbeth shall sleep no more!' "Pull yourself together," Lady Macbeth told him. "Go, wash your hands, put on your nightclothes, and we'll tell everyone we were asleep when it happened." When Duncan's guards discovered that the king was dead, Macbeth and his wife came yawning from their room, pretending to be shocked and horrified. Lady Macbeth even fainted. They played their part so well that Duncan's followers decided to make Macbeth, the dead king's cousin, the next king of Scotland. But although Macbeth had gotten away with murder, he was afraid that Banquo would be the next to plot for the throne. Hadn't the weird women said that Banquo would be the father of kings? Maybe Banquo was planning to put his children on the throne in Macbeth's place. So Macbeth hired 3 murderers to follow Banquo on his morning's ride and kill him. Now Macbeth was truly safe. But as he sat at dinner that night, Macbeth saw Banquo's ghost. He shouted, "Hence, horrible shadow!" startling his other guests who could see nothing. As time went on, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth felt more and more guilt. They had nightmares. "We sleep in the affliction of these terrible dreams that shake us nightly," Macbeth complained. "Duncan sleeps peacefully in his grave. He is better off than we are." And Lady Macbeth started to walk in her sleep, rubbing her hands together over and over, as if she were washing them. "Out, out, bloody spot," she would whisper, until someone woke her up. Finally, Macbeth decided to go find the 3 weird women again and ask them whether his throne was safe. He discovered them in a cave, huddled around a cauldron, chanting, "Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble." One of the women, hearing Macbeth approach, said, "By the pricking of my thumbs, something evil this way comes." And in came Macbeth. "Answer me this question," he said to them. "How long will I be king?" "Till the forest walks up to your castle," the women answered him. "That will never be," Macbeth exclaimed. "Who can command the trees to unfix their roots from the earth?" And he went home comforted. But when he arrived at his gate, he saw his servants weeping. "Your lady is dead," they told him. Lady Macbeth had died of a guilty conscience, and worse was to come. Macbeth's lookouts began to shout that they could see a forest approaching the castle. When Macbeth ran up to the wall, he saw an enormous army moving towards his castle, each man carrying in front of him a branch cut from the woods so that the defenders in the castle could not tell exactly how many soldiers were coming. Duncan's relatives were at the front of the attack, ready to fight for the throne. Soon the avenging army broke into the castle. Armed men ran towards Macbeth. Macbeth realized that his life was over. He shouted, "Out, out, brief candle! Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." And then he drew his sword, plunged into the fight, and was killed. Macbeth is a tragedy. At its end, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth and a number of other characters are all dead. But if Queen Elizabeth had lived to see this play, she probably would have enjoyed it. After all, it showed that a nobleman who plotted treason against a ruler would come to a bad end. Richard III tells the story of the English king who took the throne from the princes in the Tower. Henry V is about the Battle of Agincourt in France. In all, Shakespeare wrote more than 40 plays. They have been performed over and over again for the last 450 years. Shakespeare's plays have been translated into almost every language. They have been made into movies, written about in books, and studied in schools. Some of the most familiar phrases in English come from Shakespeare's plays. Have you ever heard someone say, "Something is rotten in the state of Denmark," or "To be or not to be, that is the question"? Both lines are from Hamlet. A horse, my kingdom for a horse," is from Richard III. Has your mother ever said, "You're going to eat me out of house and home"? Shakespeare first used that expression in Henry IV, Part 2. And if you've ever heard jealousy called the green-eyed monster, you've heard a line from Othello. One of Shakespeare's most famous plays, Macbeth, tells about a nobleman who wants to be king. Here is the beginning of the story. Macbeth. Scotland was at war. White-haired King Duncan, afraid that a band of rebels would throw him from his throne, sent his cousin Macbeth and Macbeth's trusted friend Banquo to fight the rebels. He waited anxiously to hear the outcome of the battle. Finally, a soldier arrived, covered with blood, straight from the battlefront. "Macbeth faced the enemy with brandished steel," the soldier gasped. "He fixed their leader's head upon the battlements. He and Banquo have fought like cannons overcharged with double cracks." "Valiant cousin," King Duncan cried out, "great happiness!" And he decreed that Macbeth would receive a new noble title, Thane of Cawdor. Thane is a Scottish word for a warrior who fights for the king. Meanwhile, Macbeth and Banquo were trudging home across a blasted heath, a bare, barren field, through fog and wind. Suddenly they saw three weird women crouched around a fire. "Hail," the weird women cackled. "Hail, Macbeth, Thane of Cawdor, king of Scotland-to-be. And hail, Banquo, you will not be king, but you will be father to kings." And then they disappeared. "Where'd they go?" Banquo asked. "Have we gone insane? I'm not the father of kings. And why did they call you Thane of Cawdor and king of Scotland? You're neither." But just then messengers arrived. "Macbeth," they said, "we have brought you word from King Duncan. He has made you Thane of Cawdor." When Macbeth heard this news, he was disturbed. The words of the weird women had already begun to come true. But how could he become King of Scotland, as well as Thane of Cawdor? His cousin Duncan was king. Then Macbeth realized that he could become king if he turned traitor and had Duncan murdered. But he thrust the thought away from him. "Let not light see my black and deep desires," he muttered to himself. But the idea stayed with him. He wrote a letter to his wife, Lady Macbeth, who was still in their castle back home. He told her about the weird women and their words. At once, Lady Macbeth seized onto the idea of Duncan's death. If her husband became king, she would become queen. But she thought to herself, "Macbeth is too full of the milk of human kindness to murder his cousin." Just as she finished reading her husband's letter, Lady Macbeth heard a messenger approaching the castle. The messenger wore the royal colors. "The king comes here tonight," the messenger announced, sliding from his horse. "Macbeth is with him. They are returning from the battlefront. Make everything ready." At once, Lady Macbeth decided that she and Macbeth would murder King Duncan that very night. She paced the room, convincing herself that she was brave enough for such a deed. "Spirit of courage and ambition, fill me from the crown to the toe, top full of direst cruelty," she growled to herself. "Make thick my blood. Let no regret or conscience shake my purpose." As she spoke these horrible words, Macbeth came into the room. "Duncan is with me," he said. Lady Macbeth put her hand on his arm. "He must be provided for," she said, with great meaning. But although Macbeth knew what his wife meant, he turned away from her. The idea of becoming king was more and more wonderful to him, but he was not yet ready to kill his cousin, King Duncan. Just then the king himself entered with Banquo and other noblemen. At once Lady Macbeth was all smiles. "Your Majesty," she cried, "you load our house with honor. Our servants are yours. Come to the hall where a great feast has been laid for you." And she led the king from the room. Macbeth remained fretting to himself. "If I were going to do it," he mumbled, "I would need to do it quickly, not wait. But oh, what a dreadful deed it would be. He is here both as my king and as my cousin. I am his host. I should shut the door against murderers, not bear the knife myself. Oh, I do not have enough determination to do this thing." When Lady Macbeth returned, having taken Duncan and the others to the dining hall, Macbeth was stern. "Lady, we will go no further with this dreadful plan. He has just given me a great honor. How can I do this?" "What?" Lady Macbeth snapped back. "Are you afraid? You'll have to live with your cowardice the rest of your life. Be a man. Screw your courage to the sticking place. When Duncan is asleep, I'll give his guards drugged wine so that they sleep like pigs, and then we'll say that his guards did it." "But will they believe us?" Macbeth asked nervously. Of course they will, Lady Macbeth said. We'll be weeping so hard over Duncan's death that they'll never suspect us. What do you think Macbeth will decide to do when the story continues? Macbeth's decision. In another part of the castle, Banquo was getting ready for bed. He took off his sword and handed it over to his servant, and then glanced out at the starless night. There's good housekeeping in heaven, he murmured to himself. All their candles have been put out. I should put my candle out as well, but I'm too restless. I feel that something terrible may happen tonight. As he said these words, Macbeth knocked on the door. Do you have everything you need? He inquired. I do, Banquo said, but I'm too restless to sleep. I've been thinking over the words of the weird women. They said that you would be Thane of Cawdor, and you are. But when they said you would be king... Let's talk about that later, Macbeth interrupted, when you have the time. For tonight, sleep well. While Macbeth and Banquo were talking, Lady Macbeth took drugged wine to Duncan's guards. Soon they were slumped outside the king's door, snoring. She took their daggers gently from their belts and crept into the king's room. Duncan, too, slept, but as Lady Macbeth stared down at him, she realized that he looked like her father. I cannot do it, she whispered to herself, backing from the room. But she laid the daggers before the doorstep. Macbeth will see them when he comes by, she thought, and perhaps he will do the deed. After Macbeth left Banquo, he wandered up and down the hall in a frenzy of uncertainty. As he grew more frantic, he began to see things. I think I see a dagger hanging before me in the air, he cried. Is it my imagination? Is it a vision telling me to carry out this dreadful plot? Here is a real dagger in my belt. Will I draw it? Yes, I will. I have made up my mind. Duncan, this night you will go to heaven or to hell. And he made his way towards the stairs. Lady Macbeth waited for her husband in their rooms. When she heard his step, she opened the door. There he stood, his face white. I have done it, he whispered, but I think I will never sleep again. I thought I heard a voice cry, sleep no more. Macbeth doth murder sleep. Macbeth shall sleep no more. Pull yourself together, Lady Macbeth told him. Go, wash your hands, put on your nightclothes, and we'll tell everyone we were asleep when it happened. When Duncan's guards discovered that the king was dead, Macbeth and his wife came yawning from their room, pretending to be shocked and horrified. Lady Macbeth even fainted. They played their part so well that Duncan's followers decided to make Macbeth, the dead king's cousin, the next king of Scotland. But although Macbeth had gotten away with murder, he was afraid that Banquo would be the next to plot for the throne. Hadn't the weird women said that Banquo would be the father of kings? Maybe Banquo was planning to put his children on the throne in Macbeth's place. So Macbeth hired 3 murderers to follow Banquo on his morning's ride and kill him. Now Macbeth was truly safe. But as he sat at dinner that night, Macbeth saw Banquo's ghost. He shouted, "Hence, horrible shadow!" startling his other guests who could see nothing. As time went on, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth felt more and more guilt. They had nightmares. We sleep in the affliction of these terrible dreams that shake us nightly, Macbeth complained. Duncan sleeps peacefully in his grave. He is better off than we are. And Lady Macbeth started to walk in her sleep, rubbing her hands together over and over, as if she were washing them. Out, out, bloody spot, she would whisper, until someone woke her up. Finally, Macbeth decided to go find the 3 weird women again, and ask them whether his throne was safe. He discovered them in a cave, huddled around a cauldron, chanting, Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. One of the women, hearing Macbeth approach, said, By the pricking of my thumbs, something evil this way comes. And in came Macbeth. Answer me this question, he said to them. How long will I be king? Till the forest walks up to your castle, the women answered him. That will never be, Macbeth exclaimed. Who can command the trees to unfix their roots from the earth? And he went home comforted. But when he arrived at his gate, he saw his servants weeping. Your lady is dead, they told him. Lady Macbeth had died of a guilty conscience, and worse was to come. Macbeth's lookouts began to shout that they could see a forest approaching the castle. When Macbeth ran up to the wall, he saw an enormous army moving towards his castle, each man carrying in front of him a branch cut from the woods so that the defenders in the castle could not tell exactly how many soldiers were coming. Duncan's relatives were at the front of the attack, ready to fight for the throne. Soon the avenging army broke into the castle. Armed men ran towards Macbeth. Macbeth realized that his life was over. He shouted, "Out, out, brief candle! Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." And then he drew his sword, plunged into the fight, and was killed. Macbeth is a tragedy. At its end, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth and a number of other characters are all dead. But if Queen Elizabeth had lived to see this play, she probably would have enjoyed it. After all, it showed that a nobleman who plotted treason against a ruler would come to a bad end.